He's considered rock and roll royalty today, a solid hit maker, scoring in the Billboard Top 100 12 times. Seven of them reached the top 40. He's a Baton Rouge boy who cut his teeth on rhythm and blues, and he's traveled and performed in the company of greats like Jerry Lee Lewis, the late Fats Domino, and Chuck Berry. It is my honor and pleasure to have Mr. Jimmy Clanton on the phone with me. Hi, Jimmy, and welcome to the Hot Wax and Doo-Wop Memory Show. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. I'm doing well, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
I understand that you live out in the woods.
That's true. I live in, it's a long story, in southern Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, the Amish country. It's too long of a story to go into how I ended up here, but it's absolutely just wonderful here. The part that I live in, there are no farms for sale. Nobody wants to sell. And so it's still 1957
Wow.
Right here where I live.
Wow. That sounds really nice.
It's wonderful.
Well, Jimmy, just to be clear, I want our listeners to know that you're still performing out there and you're recording. And I have to tell you, you've never sounded better. I'll be catching your show at Nathan Gothel's Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll show here in San Bernardino next month. Having said that, there is some talk of you retiring soon. We hope not, but tell us more about that.
Well, I started feeling this way emotionally, mentally, about a year ago. This coming September, I will turn 80 years of age.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've been blessed. I've taken care of myself. And ironically, God has blessed me. My voice is still in good shape. And so I have no complaints about that. But the traveling is a little more tedious and laborious all over the nation. And I made the decision. In fact, the way it happened was I was getting ready to be introduced on a show, and as I took the microphone, I just felt, you know what, I'm ready to just kind of call it quits. And so I started thinking about it, and indeed I have three or four shows booked, one into November of next year, 2019, at which time I will be 81 years of age. And so wherever I'm going right now, I am saying goodbye. I just did a show in Pottstown, PA, and kind of teared up, and I told people, I'm saying goodbye. It's been a great, great thing. I've been doing this for 60 years. So where I'm going now, next show in California, I'll be doing that show, and I will be saying goodbye because it'll be the last time that I will be out there.
Oh, well, how about recording? Are you going to continue to record?
No, I did a couple of new CDs starting back about 10 years ago, simply because it was just fun to start writing, and I wrote different types of songs, and I found a recording studio down in Houma, Louisiana that really did a great job. So I did a CD down there called Everybody Needs Love. I wrote all the songs on it. And then I just finished last year a CD of eight songs, and I wrote those except for one called I'll Bring It, It's All For You. And that's it. I've recorded my last singing recordings, and I'd like to say anything that I've recorded from way back up to date is available at my store on my website, jimmyclanton.com.
Well, we'll ask you about that a little bit later on, but I want to thank you for sending those CDs to me. I've been listening to them, and oh, wow, we're going to miss you, Jimmy, I'll tell you. You still have a very strong voice and unforgettable songs.
Well, I appreciate that, and, you know, I'm thankful. I've always made this statement. I want to go out at the top of my game, and so I know I'm going to be okay for the next year, taking care of myself. And so every show I do, I want to be at the best of my looks, the way I feel, the way I dress, and the way I sound. That's just important to me, and I really believe fans pay money to see and to hear me at the top of my game. And so that's what I do. And it's not because of money. It's just that I'm ready to move on.
I understand that there comes a time in everybody's life that that happens. It's happened to me, and I know when you get that calling, you've got to follow it. I understand. But let me take you back to the start.
Okay.
I read that you were in a few bands named the Dixie Cats and the Rockets. And in fact, your first big hit, Just a Dream, was billed as Jimmy Clanton and the Rockets. How long did you stay with the Rockets?
I actually stayed with the Rockets about another 9 months. And after, the reason I didn't stay with them, truthfully, is unbeknownst to me, is that after I made that appearance on American Bandstand in 1958, Just a Dream literally became an overnight hit, and I truly was, I'll just, the way they say, just an overnight sensation. And the next thing I know, I've got booking agencies, New York wanting me, Alan Freed wanted me, Dick Clark wanted me, everybody in it, that was anybody in DJing and TV shows and so forth wanted me on their shows. And so I did have to say to the Rockets, you know, I'm going to have to leave because this is just astounding. So I'm going from like 25, I used to make $45 a night, and now I was going to thousands of dollars for a one-night appearance. And so this literally happened overnight. And so after Just a Dream with the Rockets, I did leave.
Oh, wow. Let me ask you this, and this is just personal. I went to a place called the Rocket Room, and I believe it was in Washington, D.C. I was stationed in Bainbridge, Maryland, and we went up the coast a little bit. And
I remember that place, yeah.
I saw you at that Rocket Room. And
no kidding.
Yeah. Oh. When I was listening to Just a Dream, as a matter of fact, it brought me back there. And I said, what was the name of that place? And I just sat for almost an hour trying to think of it, and then it came to me, and it was called the Rocket Room. Did that have anything to do with the Rockets that you were with?
No, not at all.
I didn't think so.
I was one of hundreds and hundreds of clubs and places that I ended up performing at. So
Remember you did a great show, too, just like you do today.
Well, thank you.
And that was many years ago. I think I was around 64, if I'm not mistaken.
That was a lot of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it sure was. Tell you what, let's listen to that first hit, the one that shot into the top 10 back in 58. It's called Just a Dream.
Just a dream, just a dream.
Just a dream.
All our plans and all our schemes.
All our schemes.
How could I think you'd be mine? Those lies I tell myself each time. I know that we could never last. You just can't seem to end the past. Just a dream. I dreamed in vain. With you I'd only live in pain. Your picture is always with me. I can still hear that same mournful song. Cannot live in misery. I know that I won't forget you. But now I know it's too late for me.
Play it, boy.
Thank you. I know that I won't forget you, but now I know it's too late. No, it's never too late with folks like y'all around for me.
What a great hit that was, and it still gets a lot of attention today. And as a matter of fact, that was a fresh recording that you did that had all the bells and whistles of today's technology cranked. And I hope our listeners enjoyed that. I sure did.
Thank you.
That's from your album. Which album was that? Everybody Needs Love?
Everybody Needs Love. It's a CD that I did about 10 years ago. And I'm really proud of my songwriting on that CD, yeah.
I understand a recording studio owner named Cosimo Matassa was the one that got you started and signed to Ace Records. That must have been an exciting time for you. Tell us about your memories of Cosimo and those early recording sessions.
Well, actually, there's not a lot to tell. Cosimo owned that recording studio. And I had gone in with the Rockets to just do a recording to see what we heard like, what we sounded like. And a guy comes into the studio after we had left the studio doing that recording. His name was Johnny Vincent, and he owned a recording company called Ace Records. And he happened to hear a playback of that little recording session, and he just... something about my tinny voice and my song and the way I phrased, and he ended up calling me, and technically Cosimo had nothing to do with my career. It all
really?
Had to do with Johnny Vincent hearing that playback, signing me to a recording contract, and then Johnny Vincent and I pretty much dealt on a personal basis, and that's pretty much all that Cosimo had to do with it, because I tended to run my own business in no time at all, as far as the recordings and as far as the booking agencies and the different places I went all over the world to do shows.
Well, you heard it right here. That goes to show that there's a lot written out there that just isn't true. I know.
Yes.
What it was pretty clear to me that it said that Cosimo's the one that got you started and got you signed and all of that. So I'm glad you cleared that up, Jimmy.
Yes.
I read that you were known as the Swamp Pop R&B Teenage Idol back in the day. Have you heard that? And what did you think of that title?
Well, a friend of mine, in fact, the arranger-producer of my early CDs there, I mean, of my later CDs, Pershing Wells, he said to me a couple of years ago, I was down there, he said, "Jimmy, I've done a lot of homework on this term, Swamp Pop." And he said, "As far as I can go back," he said, "without any doubt," he said, "you were the first white single artist to actually be termed Swamp Pop." And so when I thought back and going back in my career, I actually was the first white single artist to record down there in Louisiana, in that swamp area, the bayous and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And it was only within the next year after that some of the other artists started actually getting recording contracts. But come to find out, I was the first. And the reason it said Swamp Pop was that I was a pop artist, but the swamp sound was a combination of rhythm and blues and rock and roll. You always had a rock and roll drums, guitar, piano, and bass, but the rhythm and blues part Also, you had horns, so we had trumpet and saxophone. So it was a six-piece band. Anyway, to finalize the Swamp Pop, it was really a combination of rock and roll, rhythm and blues, where we had what we call a full rhythm section, guitar, drums, piano and bass, and horns. And I always used a trumpet and saxophone. So that was really considered the Swamp Pop sound of my day, back in the early days there.
Well, maybe I'm jumping ahead a bit, but I know that growing up you were very influenced by R&B. And did you ever record at the Muscle Shoals studio with those great R&B musicians known as the Swampers?
Never did, because I always had such a connection with the musicians in New Orleans, because most of those musicians really belonged to the Fats Domino band. And they were so incredibly good that I had no desire or interest to go record anywhere else.
Wow, the Fats Domino band, huh?
That's correct.
Oh, that's that's different.
Yes.
Well, I know. I was very much taken in by that whole group down there. They kind of emulated the Wrecking Crew. Have you ever had any Wrecking Crew musicians in your background?
To be honest with you, I don't even know who that would be.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hal Blaine, Osborne. Oh, man, that's a whole bunch of them. But you've heard of the Wrecking Crew, haven't you?
Hal Blaine, these guys were on the West Coast, and I only recorded in New Orleans. I did one session in New York, but then I did a series of engagements in Nashville, but I insisted on having horns in Nashville. And so, in fact, Ray Stevens was the one that produced us several songs that I recorded there. I always loved this song that Jimmy Charles recorded called A Million to One.
Right. Boy, that was a great song.
I told Ray Stevens about it in Nashville, and I said, but I really want that horns sound and that feel. And so I re-recorded Jimmy Charles's A Million to One and put it out. And I've been told that people love my rendition of A Million to One, which is on a CD that I put out.
A million to one. That's what I folks think about.
Most exciting events in your life had to be that 59 movie produced by Alan Freed, Go Johnny Go. Tell us about that, and what was it like working with the late Alan Freed? And I'm laughing because I was calling it Go Jimmy Go. That's what was in my head at the time.
That's happened several times. Well, I when Just a Dream hit, I was very, very close friends, personal friends with Alan Freed. I did so many of his shows with him in New York, and I would be on the radio with him. And anyway, I was at a show that he was producing, and he just very nonchalantly came over to me backstage in New York, and he said, "I'm getting ready to go to Hollywood." And he said, to make, I don't know if he said it was my final movie or what, and he said, it's a movie that I'm going to do. It's a rock and roll movie. And he said, "I would like for you to play the lead in it." And just very nonchalantly, and I said, "Wow." And I thought, this would be something new and interesting. So, of course, without any hesitation, I agreed. And so we did go out to California, and we shot that movie together. And most people think those other artists in that movie were right there in Hollywood with me. But that's not how it happened at all. All of the artists, they did their singing and their records, their hit records, they did that back in New York on a soundstage, and we just inserted what they did into the movie. But I was the only one. It was me and Alan and Chuck Berry in California on the set itself, and it was tremendously fun. And I knew just enough to not get scared. The actual movie was titled Go. Was called Johnny Melody, and I was going to play that part of Johnny Melody. But simultaneously with the announcing of the movie, Chuck Berry comes out with that incredible Johnny B. Goode record, and the hook in there was Go, Go, Johnny, Go. And that record became such a huge, huge hit.
You're right.
And Chuck was already signed to be in the movie with Alan and myself. And so, obviously, Alan wanted to just piggyback the success of that movie, and so he changed it from Johnny Melody to Go, Johnny, Go.
Oh, how about that?
By the way, my original script of Johnny Melody, it says it, Johnny Melody on the front. The original script of that movie is in Cleveland at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I told her when it comes to talking, I'm the sweetest, sweet talker in the world. Well, she said, "You better start talking if you want me to be your girl." And she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go. Go, Jimmy, go."
Well, I talked her off the floor when she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go."
I told her when it comes to dancing, I'm the best young dancer in the land. Well, she looked at me with a twinkle in her eye, and then she took my hand and she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go. Go, Jimmy, go."
Well, I talked her off the floor when she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go."
When it comes to kissing, I ain't nothing but a kissing fool. She started to giggle when I told her that our teacher thinks she never learned in school. And she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go. Go, Jimmy, go."
Well, I talked her off the floor when she said,
"Go, Jimmy, go.
A little bit of a play on the movie title and your big hit, Go Jimmy Go. What a great song that was. I really enjoyed that movie back when it came out, and it looked like you had a lot of fun filming it, and you said that. With all those other stars, wow, it had to have been fantastic. And you also went on to film another movie called Teenage Millionaire with Rocky Marciano, Zazu Pitts, and of course, that too had some rock and roll greats like Jackie Wilson and Chubby Checker and Dion, as well as the Bill Black combo and others. What did you think of that movie?
Let me correct you. The boxer in the movie that played with was not Rocky Marciano. It was Rocky Graziano.
Oh, okay. Okay, my bad.
Hey, all right.
I thought it was Rocky Marciano. All right.
That was, that was a lot of fun, but also that was pretty much just a kind of almost a carbon copy of the movie I did with Alan Freed. In Teenage Millionaire, was just a young guy who was already a millionaire, but he wanted to be in the record business. But it was the same scenario, and, had a lot of the artists of that day in that movie. But to be honest with you, the Alan Freed movie was the one that everybody really connected with, and because it really was the epitome of the rock and roll Alan Freed days. And
absolutely,
so,
yeah.
Oh, Johnny Go was really the rock and roll movie, yeah.
Well, by 1960, I think everyone in and out of the biz knew that you were there. Around this time, you recorded a song called Another Sleepless Night, which went top 40 here in the U.S., reaching number 22, I believe. At the same time, it started climbing up the charts in the UK, but for some reason, it never went higher. And I read that it was the only recording of yours to chart in the UK. That was surely a great record. And in my opinion, that and other songs should have been hits there as well. What do you think caused that? Perhaps a lack of promotion? Maybe a lack of airplay? Or
Ace Records, for whatever reason, was not a strong record company overseas. It was mainly in the United States, and that's pretty much the reason for the non-success of a lot of my records in the UK and some of those other countries.
Another sleepless night, I sit alone and cry. Time till dawn, memories linger on since we said goodbye. Throughout that sleepless night, no matter what I do, you're always on my mind, and though you're gone, I find in love with you. Shadows fall and I recall the love that you once had for me. Miss you so. When lights are low, I think of things that used to be. You're always in my heart, although you're out of sight. Lonely teardrops burn as I toss and turn. Another sleepless night. You're always in my as I toss and turn, another sleepless night.
That song should have gone to the top, and I think you've explained it very well as to what may have caused that. Awesome track. Skipping ahead, I understand that you were a DJ in the early 70s on WHEX Columbia, Pennsylvania. How did that come about?
Well, technically, I was not a DJ. I had moved to Lancaster County, and I wanted to live in an area where I could do shows, but in close proximity to where I lived. And so living in that part of Pennsylvania, I did a lot of shows on the East Coast where I would drive, do the engagements, come back. And a guy locally called me and he said, there's this new station and they're just playing the oldies. And would you ever consider kind of doing a talk radio playing music from your era and talking about that era with such firsthand information? So technically, I saw where I had time to do that. And so I gave them a timeline. I said, well, between like 10 in the morning and 12 noon, I said, I would consider to do that. And so what would happen is I had a guy there, and he would play a record, and I would tell a little vignette short story about myself and the artist who did that song. And then I ended up doing a couple of on-air interviews with people that I'd done shows with, Brenda Lee, Frankie Avalon, and that kind of thing. And I did that for about a year, and then I moved on from there.
Oh, now you see, there's another thing where the history books are saying that you were actually there and was a DJ from 72 to 76. That's more than a year.
Not true.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's why I like talking to folks like yourself. You bring the truth out. I don't know how many times I've been corrected on things because of what the history said, but sometimes they get it wrong. Well, I believe it's common knowledge that you're an ordained minister. When did you get that calling?
Because of some personal problems I had with quote-unquote religion in my early days. In August of 1980, I actually was in my bedroom. It's about 11:30 at night, and I had turned on TV, was watching, there was this Christian program, and this man started talking about what Jesus Christ did on the cross. And when I got a full knowledge, I mean, it was like a rhema for me. It was like the Word of God given a living voice. That's what the word rhema means. And when I got a hold of what that man said and realized that all of that religiosity that I had been involved in as a young man because of my parents really did not bring me into fellowship with the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, it did more to separate me because of the do's and don'ts. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that program, I actually did what that man said. I said, Jesus, I believe in you. I asked Jesus to come into my heart. I asked him to forgive me my sins. I asked him to be my Savior and Lord. And immediately, I had a visitation, not only spiritually, but physically from the God of this universe. He visited me physically.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And I've had four visitations over these years, personal visitations, and I was so overwhelmed by the presence of God, knowing that he was real. And that the truth of the matter is, between 1980, when this happened, and 1994, I left music altogether. I couldn't tell you who did what or who sang what. And for 14 years, I went throughout the nation telling people what Jesus did for me that night in August of 1980. But in 1994, a true prophetess came to me at a service. She said, I believe God is getting ready to take you back, Jimmy, 180 degrees back in the music realm, because you now have that knowledge and the revelation of where you can be a blessing to people behind the scenes. And so within no time at all, I got a phone call on my unlisted phone number, and a man said to me, well, I've been looking for you. People have been asking for you for 17 years. And my pastor that I'd been associated with, he said, that's God, Jimmy. And do you know, I accepted that engagement, and from that day until the present, everywhere I went since 1994, all the shows, there's been at least one person, one-on-one, that God sets aside for me to minister to.
Preaching and singing must have really kept you busy, Jimmy. I read that you were inducted into the Gulf Coast Hall of Fame and the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. Tell us about that, and is there any movement afoot to get you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, first of all, the Gulf Coast Hall of Fame and the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame, they were pretty much just, so to speak, local things that went on, and it just had to do with local artists And of course, probably, as far as the rock and roll, I was probably the most well known. And so, yes, I was inducted into those. And but as far as the in Cleveland with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, most of us who know anything about the behind the scenes in the music realm, there's so much politics involved with that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh yes, there is.
That I just don't even touch that subject.
Oh, okay. I hear you. I know there's a lot of talk about that.
Well, like I say, I've never been one to be physically or emotionally into how many Hall of Fames I've been inducted into, you know. And so I really have never really concerned myself with that so much as just making good records, making good songs that I felt like my public, the fan base that I have, what they like. And so I'm very, very content with just being in that place in my career.
You said earlier that, and I said that I really enjoyed those two CDs you sent me. Out of those two CDs that you did more recently, which one of them is your favorite?
Well, there's one song of those two CDs that are so very, very special, and it's because of what happened. I was doing a casino down in New Orleans with the band called Blue Eyed Soul. They had done a lot of shows with me, and it was a typical swamp pop band with horns. And I was getting ready to do that show. This is about 10 years ago now. And in the bedroom of my house, and all of a sudden I thought, if I were getting ready to do my final show of my career, where would I want it to be? And I immediately thought, I'd really want it to be in Louisiana. And so I wrote this song, and it's a song about my final show and where I would want to be performing. And it's about me going on stage and in Louisiana. And the name of the song is Lovin' Louisiana. Lovin' Louisiana.
Let it be here in Louisiana. Let it be here with family and friends in Louisiana. I won't be able to hold back the tears looking back on those wonderful years. I sang my song, I did my show for you, and I loved it so. So I want that last show to be, want it to be in my loving Louisiana. Let it be here in Louisiana, surrounded by friends, family, in my loving Louisiana. When they say, go, Jimmy, go, these dancing feet, they're a little bit slow. Still, I love to sing. It's hard to let it go. Hard to let it go. But I want that last show to be. Want it to be in Louisiana. I'll never forget all of those beautiful people. The smiling faces makes me cry. I don't want to say goodbye. Now the show is over, my final bow. Sung just a dream, right here in Louisiana. touching hands, watching tear-filled eyes, reading faces, saying goodbye. You've made me bless the memories we'll last. They're gonna last. So all my thanks to you, precious people, my sweet people in loving Louisiana. Oh yeah. Hard to let it go. This is my last show. Holding back the tears, looking back on those years. Sung for you, Louisiana, my love in Louisiana. Love you so.
It has indeed been a lot of fun and pleasure talking to you, Jimmy, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in San Bernardino August the 18th. I want to thank you for taking the time out to talk to us. Tell us, as you said before, but expound a little bit and tell our listeners where they can find more information about you and where to pick up your latest CDs.
Well, all the information on me, I'm very, very much present on Facebook. I have a Facebook personal page, and there's a Facebook page called Jimmy Clanton Group that you can request to join it. And it's all about Jimmy Clanton's career, and all the fans on Facebook, on Jimmy Clanton Group, and on the Jimmy Clanton pages, I interact with people, and it's been a great fun. Everybody pretty much has told me that there's no other artist that interacts with fans like I do, and it's just something I do. And the other thing is, of course, it's a million-dollar website, I'll tell you. Carolyn Otworth put together a website for me on jimmyclanton.com, and it's a five-star, first-class website. It has all the information about me, shows where I'm going to be, all about my music. So anything about Jimmy Clanton between Facebook and between jimmyclanton.com, people can find it.
Oh, that's great. Any last thoughts?
Well, you know, because you're talking about this one show out there in California, I want people to know, you know, come see me if you possibly can, because, folks, this is it. This is the last time that I will be out there, that I will be out there physically. And it's been an incredible chance for me to get to meet people all over America. And in these places I'm going now, it's my final time. So, California, here I come, but it's going to be my final show, and I hope you all come out.
Wow. I hope that we have a sellout crowd, I'll tell you, because we're going to miss you, Jimmy.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you've had one heck of a career.
Thank you.
Tell you what, let's take it out with one of my favorite Jimmy Clanton songs. It's called Venus in Blue Jeans on Good Time Oldies Radio. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Work of art. She's the girl who stole my heart. My Venus in blue jeans is the Cinderella I adore. She's my very special angel too, a fairy tale come true. They say there's seven wonders in the world, but what they say is